Welcome to Don't Quit Your Daydream, the show that helps you find hope and inspiration to follow the whispers of your heart. Each week, you'll hear from people creating lives that feel alive and meaningful, people out in the world finding wonder in the ordinary, along with feel-good stories and conversations rooted in mindfulness, growth, and coming home to yourself. This is your time to see the possibilities that are here for you and to create the life you've been dreaming of. Welcome to Don't Quit Your Daydream. I'm your host, Sarah Adamchak. So glad you're here. Today's conversation is all about reconnecting with who you really are and feeling good while being alive. My guest today is Dr. Karen Parker. She's a best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the founder of Quantum Human Design. She's spent decades helping people understand themselves at a deeper level. In this episode, we talk about what human design actually is and how it can help you. And we also go into her story on how she discovered human design in the first place, which is actually a really cool story. How the stories we tell about ourselves shape our lives. Why creativity is essential for our health and well-being. And how we can reconnect with our authentic selves in a world full of noise and distraction. This conversation goes in so many beautiful directions, from neuroscience to storytelling to burnout and intuition, and I think you are going to walk away with some powerful ideas to reflect on. So let's dive in. Hello, Dr. Karen. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited you're here. I'm glad to dive into this conversation.
Me too.
Well, I'm excited to hear your story. Let's get into your story about how you discovered human design in the first place.
So my story of human design is kind of magical, and because it was all sort of accidental. I'll say that my first husband did introduce me to human design. So in 1999, my first husband was going through kind of a burnout. We had four small kids, and we were living in suburban Houston, Texas. And I sent him on a spiritual retreat to Sedona, Arizona, and he came back with a human design chart. And I remember the exact moment he showed me this chart. I was standing in my yard. The kids were out playing, and he showed me this chart. And literally when I saw this chart, it was like some kind of deep temple bell went off inside of my body. Like I just had this visceral knowing that I needed to learn everything I needed to learn about this system. And so we literally put the house on the market, sold everything, packed the kids up with our cats and dogs, and a couple of weeks later, literally moved across country from Houston to Sedona, Arizona, where the headquarters for Human Design America was at that time. And when we arrived in Sedona, my youngest son had an ear infection. So I went to the pediatrician's office with this little three-year-old on my hip and went into the pediatrician's office and came out. And when I came out, across the hall was a door with the human design symbol on it. And I thought, well, I'll just go in here. So I went in the door and opened up the door to this little small office. And there was a little woman behind a giant desk. And she said to me, oh, did you come for the job? And I was like, yeah, I did. So that was actually the headquarters for human design in America. And the woman who hired me was Marianne Winokur. And she gave me a job right on the spot. And I started working for Human Design America at that time. So I worked for Human Design and got to study from the founder of Human Design, Ra Uruhu, and just learned an enormous amount about human design and stayed with traditional human design for about 5 years. And in 2005, I kind of struck out on my own at that point in time. And I struck out on my own because my background is in nursing and therapeutic arts. I had been a nurse. I had been a midwife. I'd studied to be a life coach in 1998, way before it was trendy. I had studied healing touch, energy psychology. I trained with Gary Craig and learned EFT in 2000. And to me, human design wasn't the end road. It wasn't like something that you would follow sort of religiously. It was a tool. And I wanted to continue exploring how could I use this as a tool to help people optimize their lives. And so that kind of began a 8-9 year journey of looking at the system, playing with the system, rewriting certain pieces and parts of the system to make it more therapeutically accessible. And ultimately, In 2022, I completed my dissertation in integrative medicine and used human design as a tool to help people use narrative psychology and conscious storytelling to improve health and wellness.
Conscious storytelling. That's honestly something I'm not very familiar with, and I hope we'll get a chance to get into that here in a bit.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you had a lot of synchronicities there, and I love how you mentioned it was like bells went off in your body. That's kind of how I was when I first discovered breath work. And it was the same, like, I have to know more about it. I want to know, like, I just did a deep dive and stayed up way too late. So that's so cool that your road led you there. And then here you are today. It's pretty magical.
Yeah, I like that. That's kind of how I think about it. Because, I mean, I will say along the ways, I've had many, many seasons where I've been like, I hate this. I want to quit. You know, why can't I just do something normal? Why can't I just go get a real job?
Yes.
And every time I've tried to quit, something kind of magical has kicked me back onto that path. So I do feel it's a little bit part of my path anyway.
I love that. It's like you're meant to be where you are. You try to leave and the universe is like, nope, stay.
Yep. Exactly.
So when I heard you were coming on the show, I think I've taken my design type before, but I wanted to dive into your specific design type or design types, and I was super curious. So I went to your website, found my type, and then all the other things that go with it, the numbers, I don't really remember all the other things that were there, but for someone like me who is brand new to human design, what's the easiest way for someone to start exploring their own chart?
Well, I would say first, you do need to have your chart, and you can go get a chart at freehumandesignchart.com. And one of the things that that chart is going to show you, which is probably the best and most important piece to start with, is it's going to tell you your energy type. So in human design, there are 5 energy types, and that energy type tells you about a little bit about your purpose. It tells you about some of your strengths. It tells you about core emotional themes that sometimes can be the burr under your saddle on a regular basis. But I would say most importantly, what your human design type teaches you is how to start making better decisions. So if we think of our lives and where we are right now in our lives, everything in your life right now is the way that it is, basically because of the sum total of every decision you've ever made, right? You've kind of choice by choice created where you are in your life right now. Sometimes we don't like that, but it's kind of true, right? And so part of what happens is that even before we're born, we are conditioned to live or follow a certain set of familial and cultural expectations. Those expectations are oftentimes encoded in us physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, because we've been raised, most of us, if we're very fortunate, by well-intending people. And I think all parents really actually are well-intending. They just don't always have the ability to execute things. But, you know, through a series of conditioning experiences, we learn to follow the rules. We follow the rules of our family. We follow the rules of the world. And while those rules might work really well for some people, for most of us to follow those rules, we have to shut down certain core pieces of who we are. I like to think of it as sort of you're born with a natural frequency, like you're born with a signature frequency. And as you forget your own soul song and you start trying on and trying to, you know, indoctrinate yourself or lay over society's song, society's expectations for you, it creates dissonance. It creates this inner sense of dissatisfaction or frustration or bitterness and even anger. Or sometimes it just creates numbness, right? Because to a certain degree, when we begin to make those society-sanctioned choices, which, you know, starts for us sometimes even before kindergarten, in order for us to survive and not go start raving mad, we have to numb out our bodies. I always think about, you know, a 5-year-old in kindergarten when they first get there, you know, and they're sitting in that seat. And they've had a whole like 5 years of playing and freedom. And all of a sudden they've got to focus and learn all this stuff. And they don't necessarily want to learn that stuff. And they're looking out the window with the swings. And they're like, why can't I go outside and play? You know, the body is sort of telling them what they need and want. But society is saying, no, you got to sit here, be quiet, learn your alphabet, learn your numbers. And to survive, you have to go numb to a certain degree. And so when you first learn your human design, every one of those five types has a different way of connecting to your body's inner knowingness around what decisions feel right for my authentic self and what decisions don't. And so it really invites you into this practice of not only remembering really beautiful pieces of your purpose and how your energy works, but most importantly, really reconnecting with how do I make better decisions? And how do those good decisions, those aligned, authentic decisions that are in harmony with my signature frequency, how do those decisions feel in my body? And when you start following what's called your strategy for each one of those types, for your type, when you start following that strategy, over time, you start reawakening your trust in your inner compass, your trust in your visceral gut level knowing, and you start to be able to sense and feel what is right, feel like for me, and begin to choose differently, choice by choice. And that ultimately starts crafting for you a different experience of the world and a different experience of, you know, your life.
That's actually resonating so deeply with me. I feel like so many people wake up and one day realize they're living a life that doesn't actually feel like theirs. Like they followed all the rules, they did everything they were supposed to do, and yet something inside feels off. I just believe it's so important for everyone to tap into who they really are at their core, tap into their authentic selves. Let's go a little bit deeper there. How can we, besides finding our human design type, begin to connect to our inner knowing, to who we really are, if, you know, that's kind of been dormant for a while, if we've been doing all the things like scrolling and forgetting to go outside? What are some ways that you can help us right now?
That's such a great question. And I really appreciate you asking me that question, because I do think sometimes when I get into conversations with people on podcasts and, you know, wherever else I end up showing up, that people really want to focus on human design. And I love that we focus on human design. It's a great tool. But I think that it's very easy for any kind of personality assessment system or any system in general for us to think this is the way, or this is the system, or this is the path. And human design doesn't explain everything. And I'm always saying that to my students. I'm always saying it doesn't explain everything. And, you know, that process of untangling yourself from your conditioned story and untangling yourself from those familial and societal expectations that we all follow is a very rich and diverse process that has a lot of moving parts and pieces. And certainly, I'm not going to say human design isn't a great tool to help you with that. But, you know, I would say there are a lot of things that you can add to the suite of healing that you give yourself. And I would certainly say, first and foremost, and I'm kind of not kidding, get off the phone, get off the computer. You know, these are systems that have been engineered to addict us. And, you know, we could do thousands of shows on, you know, why should we get off of computers and screens? And part of it is just they affect your nervous biology, your neurobiology. Fortunately, we know this a lot from studies with children, and we watch how, you know, early screen use and being connected to devices at early ages does change the way the brain works. And we know it also changes the way we think. It changes the way it patterns how we see the world. And the most dangerous things that it does is it actually decreases our creativity. And one of the ways in which it decreases our creativity is it increases our stress. Because we get into these dopamine cycles, and when we don't get the dopamine that we're being trained to receive from phones and devices, and then we stop being creative because the brain goes into a state of stress that gets deprived. And when we get stressed, when we go into high cortisol states, you know all this from breath work, right? When we go into high cortisone states and high adrenaline states, the creative parts of the brain shut down. Because when you're in fight or flight, or a low-grade fight or flight, you know, your brain isn't like, oh, I wonder what I should do. Let me think of some creative resolutions of how I can escape from the bear, right? You're running on pure instinct, and you're running very much on, you know, pre-programmed, very nominal, very small amounts of data, because you can't afford to waste your energy thinking, right? So in order for us to begin the process of healing We have to become more creative. And certainly I would say, turn off the screens, go outside.
Yeah.
So go outside every flipping day, you know, connect with other people. And I would say cultivate a practice of staying inspired, because the process of staying inspired and being creative, and I'm using the word being intentionally, can actually be profoundly healing. And one of the things that I did with my research is I looked at intentionally being creative, and particularly intentionally using storytelling as a transformative tool. Because when we start actively engaging in our lives through the lens of the hero's journey and really starting to see our life as an adventure and a story and seeing ourselves as the hero or the main character in our story, we now are building a body of research that says that makes us more resilient. Understanding and reconnecting with events in our lives through that lens gives us the capacity to experience greater equanimity, meaning we're able to stay in a place of calm, even though there's chaos happening around us. It allows us to shift our perspective. In the research that I did, I looked at the impact of intentional storytelling on immune response. It makes our immune response go up. It's good for our health and well-being to stay and be creative. And that's not a human design process. It's a lifestyle choice. And it's hard. It's hard in the beginning when you have to shed what I think our culture has invited us to sort of mindlessly partake in, and really to break free from, you know, I'm not anti-media and I'm not anti-Wi-Fi, social media, whatever. I'm not. You know, I use social media all the time for my business. I have a 16-year-old. My youngest is still at home. She has an Etsy shop and she has an Instagram page and she uses that for business and marketing, and she watches other people who do art. You know, there are beautiful uses for these things, but when they begin to color our perspective to the extent to where we lose our innate creativity, they actually become dangerous.
Absolutely. What I'm hearing, I love that you said you're not anti-media. I'm hearing, though, that you are pro-human, like tapping into being human and feeling and actually being here for your life, not just being on autopilot. Yeah, I actually love what you're saying about creativity, because I see this all the time when I teach art, when I've had classes for adults. Adults are the first to say, well, I'm not creative. And I always want to challenge that belief. So I'm curious, why is creativity actually important for our health and our lives? Like, why is it something that we need to do?
Well, first of all, for anybody who says you're not creative, let's break this down for a second, because if you're not creative, you're dead. And so you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. So here's what happens. When your brain encounters ideas, archetypes, concepts, even visual images. So if I say the word money, right? If I say the word money, the minute you hear the word money, your brain produces a photon storm. That's light, because that's how the nervous system works. That's why it works so fast, right? So your brain produces this photon storm. That photon storm causes your brain to produce a chemical, neurotransmitters. We can measure neurotransmitters. It's a physical, material thing. So stop for just a second and recognize that in this moment, you just turned light to matter. That's how creative you are. Now, the neurotransmitters that you produce create an emotional response. So if I say the word money and you're like, oh my God, this weekend rent is due. I hope I have it. I don't know if I have it. What am I going to do? And that word money triggers a stress response in you. Those neurotransmitters are what created that stress response. If you have a belief that, oh, money comes to me every day in the mail and I'm really, you know, financially fortunate and no matter where I go, money just falls out of the sky for me, and that's your belief system, when you heard the word money, your body produced neurotransmitters that created a state of optimism and a state of what's called coherence, meaning you didn't have a stress response, you had a creative response. And that creative response is conditioning how you see the world, and that's training you or entraining you to see possibility everywhere you go. So when we say I'm not creative, we're all creative. You're always creating. You're never not creating. Your body is constantly in a state of creation in response to the world outside of you. And That creativity can certainly be consciously harnessed as a way of calibrating the mind and the body into a state of coherence, which is a high health, high wellness-based state where the mind and the body are in sync with each other. And there's no way you cannot be creative. Everybody's creative. But we can consciously cultivate creative practices. And part of the practice, creative practice that I love to teach about is conscious storytelling or narrative psychology, because the brain is basically a storytelling machine or a meaning-making machine. And so when we encounter the world, we are always, based on our response and based on our entrainment and based on our conditioning, creating a story in response to what we experience in life. And if the stories that you are holding in your body and in your mind are not good stories, meaning they're stories that don't include your lovability, your self-worth, your courage, your capacity to trust yourself, your authenticity, or anything else that might be limiting you or holding you back. If you've got a repeating story, and let me be clear, the brain and the nervous system are really effective, efficient organs. They are always chunking things down into the minimal amount of effort and finding the easiest path of least resistance and the pattern, right? That's how your brain and your nervous system is working. If you entrained your system towards a story that's limiting, then you're going to keep repeating the pattern of that limiting story again and again and again. Most of us try to change those stories using logic. When we go to therapy, oftentimes, not always, but when we go to therapy, we're kind of thinking through the story, right? We're retelling it and we're thinking through it and we're analyzing it. Even when we try to do some of the techniques that were taught in personal growth and development, they tend to be very linear, logical stories. Systems. And when we try to tackle shifting the mind, changing the mind on a linear, logical level, by doing something repeatedly, like saying an affirmation every day, right? That's a linear, logical way of changing the brain, because anything that's patterned, anything that's repetitive and patterned is linear, logical. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't work to a certain degree, but it has limitations. And part of the limitation is that when we start trying to use linear, logical ways to change our thinking and change our mindset, our brain's first response is to kick into suspicion, to kick into resistance. Because that's also part of linear logical thinking. Because our systems are so patterned, when we try to change the pattern, those patterns were put there in the first place to protect us. Right? We have defensive patterns, and those defensive patterns are encoded into our stories.
Can you share some examples on what that might look like?
If you think, for example, that when something good happens, that you have to kind of hold your breath because there's another shoe that's going to drop, right? And how many of us have that to a certain degree, some variation of that story around some aspect in our life, right? You meet a nice guy. You're like, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop?
Yeah,
right? You make some money. When's the other shoe going to drop? Right? So we have these conditioned patterns that are doubtful and suspicious and anticipatory of like, okay, what's the next worst case scenario? And that's because that's kind of how we're hardwired. We're hardwired to, again, make sure we stay safe. And that's kind of how the nervous system is arranged. If we go over to, and I'm going to say the other side of the brain, but it's really not that simple. I think sometimes we see on social media, we see those images of, you know, left brain is like gray and black and white. Right brain is like really colorful. Our brain isn't really that divided. But let's say if you shift your intentions to change your mindset and change your story, out of this linear, logical, pseudo left brain part of yourself, over to this very creative, sensual, storytelling part of yourself. And you sprinkle in through actually literally sitting down and saying, I'm going to write my way through this story that I have, and I'm going to rewrite the story in such a way that I'm going to be the main character in the story, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm going to have some challenges in this story, and maybe I'm going to call in some dragons and some druids to help me, and I'm going to gain some special magical powers in working through this story. And as I rewrite this story in this very intentional, creative, fun way, I'm actually changing my brain, because my brain, which is kind of dumb, even though it's brilliant, doesn't really know the difference between me telling a story about, oh my God, my mom said this and my dad said this, and now I had this pattern, and this is in my family, and this is in my, versus me over here slaying dragons and cleaning up, your brain doesn't know the difference between those two stories. Metaphorically, the brain is like, okay, cool, that's a possibility. When we work over here in this creative piece, we bypass that resistance. We bypass that instinctive retreat back into the old patterns, and we actually open ourselves up to reframing our identity and our narrative from a very expansive, possibility-oriented perspective. And we can take stories that we're stuck in, like stories that we retell oftentimes when we're with our girlfriends, like when we go out to eat or something and we start saying the same thing about our ex-partner or whatever, right? We can take those stories and on this other side of our being, rewrite them in such a way that we're no longer the victim in the story, or rewrite them in such a way that we emerge from that story having, you know, gotten a very special gift or a very special body of information that's a catalyst for our growth and our redemption arc. If we work on that story over here and get out of the habit of retelling it for fun and drinking wine along with it, right? If we redo this over here, we actually start to get the brain, retrain the brain to start seeing ourselves and our narrative from a different lens. And we improve our immune system.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. We do tend to get stuck in this old pattern. So it is like just that repatterning of what we tell ourselves. Improving our immune system. I am having such a hard time. So I'm very optimistic. I'm a very happy-go-lucky, glass is always full. But something has been happening to me lately. I get sick all the time, like all the time. And it's been so frustrating because I'm someone who values wellness. I teach breath work, meditation, movement, mindfulness. So part of me has been wondering, what is going on? What is my body trying to tell me? And I've been trying lately to repattern the story I tell myself. I did this really fun thing I saw floating around on socials where right before the new year, you write down 13 different things, intentions or I am statements. And then you fold them, you burn one each night. And then I opened it on the second, it was the full moon. And the one that came to me at first, I was a little disappointed. But then I was like, oh, this is the one I need. And it said, I am healthy physically, no more sickness. And so I've taped that up and I just keep repeating it over and over. Do you think you can think your way into a better immune system?
Yes. And I would say over and over is trying to tackle it on the linear plane, because pattern, doing things over and over, repeating, is part of logic, is part of reasoning, right? When we think about, if you think about the scientific method is the embodiment of logic and reasoning. And part of why it's the embodiment of logic and reasoning is you go through an experiment, right? And then you have to duplicate it again and again and again until you can statistically, mathematically say, you know, 97% of the time, this particular result can be duplicated with consistency. Anything that's duplicated over and over again, like saying an affirmation, is approaching it with logic. And I'm not saying, again, that there isn't some benefit to that, because that is part of reprogramming the pattern. But oftentimes what happens is we start to repeat it in that logical linear place of our thinking. And our first instinct is to go, no, that's not true. Look at me. I got a cold. And again, I'm not saying that it doesn't work, but it takes time. That's a very long game with the brain. So what I might suggest is, first of all, moving over to this other piece, other side, and writing out, what's the story of Sarah the healthy, right? Sarah, the one who, you know, has this internal ability to stay rooted and centered in her authentic self. Sarah, who has the capacity to be physically resilient and who, when confronted with things that might stress her body, is actually able to recognize that as a signal for retreat, self-renewal, self-care, to use these opportunities of experiencing illness to drop into a place of self-reflection and a recovery of her authentic self, so that she emerges from this season of feeling sick all the time as somebody who is strong and vibrant and vital and resilient physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Okay, dreamers, I've got something really fun for you today. I've made something for you. I created a free quiz to help you discover what kind of dreamer you are. Are you the resilient dreamer, the careful dreamer, the decided dreamer, or the infinite dreamer? Each one has its own unique strengths and challenges. And once you know yours, you'll see exactly how to move closer to your biggest goals and dreams. When you take the quiz, you'll get your personalized results, plus a free guide with reflective questions, activities, journal prompts, and a powerful Meet Your Future Self visualization to help you take the next step forward towards your dream life. I don't know about you, but I love taking quizzes. They just light me up somehow. So if you're ready to find out what kind of dreamer type you are, head over to connectedandwell.com. You'll see it at the top, or click the link in the show notes. Go on, take a few minutes for yourself today. Your future self will thank you.
Oh, I love that. That sounds so fun, just to go sit down, write our stories out, and just kind of, like you're talking about reprogramming, but reprogramming how you see yourself. That's really fun. And then you talk about getting creative. We can tap back into that second grader who loved writing and loved drawing. Maybe you can even draw a picture of this new version of yourself.
Absolutely. So I use this in a series of classes that I teach called Story Lab. And when I do Story Lab, I actually bring an entire trunk of dress-up clothes. And then once people are done rewriting their story, they dress up and they act them out and read their stories to each other. And it's very fun. And it's out of the box, right? It's not how we expect to do transformation. But what it does is it really allows the brain to get out of that stress response. Because again, when you're repeating the pattern and you're saying, I'm healthy, and your body's like, no, I'm not. What are you talking about? And your brain is like, but you're not. You're really not. Part of what's happening is you're kicking yourself into a low-grade stress response. That resistance is stress response. And again, that stress response is not healthy for your immune system, right? And it creates resistance. And it doesn't allow us to reprogram ourselves to see, well, what else is different? Now, I'll also say we run into seasons of chronic ailments, right? Chronic. And some of it is, again, I don't want to say your mind is creating illness, because it's not that simple.
Yeah.
You know, I have my oldest daughter has 3 small kids, 5 and under. And, you know, it's been pretty consistent that, like, from November to January, they're all passing all the bugs through the household. And some of that's just life, right? And immune systems and small children. And sometimes we have seasons where our immune system just isn't doing what we're used to it doing or we expect it to do. And one of the things that we have to look at, and this is actually from human design, is that when we look at the archetypes, where the archetypes for wellness and your immune system live in the body, what we see is that oftentimes our immune system, from a storytelling perspective, correlates to our sense of self-worth and our feeling that it is safe or free, or we can be valued by being our authentic selves. So when we are in integrity with our value and we live and create in integrity with our value and we're not hiding who we are, then our immune system can be strengthened. And of course, if our immune system is not functioning well, it's oftentimes an invitation from the body to say, okay, where am I out of integrity with my authentic identity? And what do I need to sit with here to restore myself back to a state of strength and resilience and sustainability?
Yeah, you bring up some good points. I was thinking about people who are facing burnout. You're talking about, where are you out of integrity with your authenticity? And people who are stuck in burnout, stress, overwhelm, what is something that the first steps they can take if they're noticing, like, hey, I'm actually not feeling okay in mind, body, or spirit?
And I love that you said burnout, because again, if I break it down into a story, you know, if you go to a masquerade party and they give you one of those little masks with a stick, right? And you hold that mask up all night. Well, what are the odds you're going to hold that mask up for more than like 30 minutes, right? At a certain point, even though that mask isn't heavy, your arm's going to get tired and you're going to drop that mask. Well, burnout is kind of what is inspiring us oftentimes to let go of that mask. It might seem like it's not a big deal to work a job you hate, or to settle for less money that you want, or not speak your truth because it keeps everybody else happy, right? But it actually takes a toll, because when we are trying to be someone we're not, or we're not saying yes when we want to say yes, and we're saying no instead, or we're saying no when we want to say yes, all those little pieces where we abandon our authentic self actually erode away our energy. And when you look at the numbers of around burnout, I mean, we live in a culture where right now about 75% of the people in the United States report themselves as experiencing the symptoms of burnout. And that doesn't really make sense if you look at the traditional definition of burnout, which usually is related to your job and not getting paid enough and not being valued enough. We're burned out for many, many reasons. Certainly, I would say the very first thing, if you are experiencing burnout or you think you're burned out, is to hit the pause button as fast as you can. And that means stop everything and recalibrate. And when I say recalibrate, I mean get really serious about asking yourselves the following questions. Am I doing enough self-care? Am I really nurturing and taking care of myself? We live in a culture that doesn't value that. And when I say self-care, I'm saying, are you doing enough self-restoration, regeneration, reconnection to the degree to where you're overflowing with energy? And I say overflowing very intentionally because we have a tendency to be like, okay, I'm feeling better. I can go back out again. And then we get into these boom and bust cycles where it's not enough. We need to be overflowing in wellness, well-being. And that comes from self-care. And self-care, you know, sometimes we have to really put on some detective goggles when it comes to exploring our self-care, because we have a tendency to confuse self-care with self-maintenance.
Can you dive a little bit deeper there and break that down for us?
Self-care is what brings you joy. It's what inspires you. It reconnects you with that creative piece, right? It's something that you love to do, that you look forward to doing, that when you're done doing it, you feel energized and not depleted. And self-maintenance are the things we got to do just to stay healthy. If, for example, if you go work out every day and you're going to work out every day because you're afraid of, you know, getting creaky in your old age, or you really want to fit into a certain size jeans, but you hate it and you dread it and you don't like getting up in time to do it and you drag yourself there. And when you're done, you're like, oh, okay, got that out of the way. That's not actually self-care. That's self-maintenance. And oftentimes we lump all that into the category of things I got to do. That's okay. That's self-care. And then when we start really looking at, am I actually including in my weekly life opportunities for me to restore, replenish, regenerate, take care of myself, play, celebrate, connect, or maybe not. If you're an introvert, get away from everyone, go be alone, lay in bed and not do anything, right? If we're not actually having that as part of our regular process, then the burnout isn't going to get any better. And so I would certainly say there's a lot that goes into healing burnout, but I would certainly say that's the first place where I encourage you to start. And especially if you're feeling like you're in a situation where some of the factors that are maybe leading to your burnout, like maybe you do have a job you hate, but you've got golden handcuffs on and you're, you know, you can't give up your job because you need the money or whatever, then start looking at what can I add? What can I, you know, continue to put into my weekly habits and patterns, and what can I remove that are going to restock and replenish my inner fire? And I can't just not say this. We also have to get good sleep. When we get into burnout, particularly when we start to get into physical burnout, we're getting into adrenal fatigue. And the only way you can restore your adrenal glands is sleep. And we are chronically sleep deprived. Now, as I said, these are the first steps. Sometimes these are the steps necessary just to physiologically bring us back to a baseline state so that then we can start exploring the bigger question of what is happening in my life that I'm abandoning myself and not taking care of myself first in my entire, you know, in my lifestyle. Where do I need to start saying no? Where do I want to start saying yes? How do I need to shift some of these agreements that I have in my relationships, my work, et cetera? But you can't do that from a depleted state. You absolutely can't do that from a depleted state.
Absolutely. I actually suffered burnout for many years running my own business, and it is not fun and I don't wish it on anybody. And it was this slow realization that I had built something really great and really successful on the outside, but on the inside, it was completely making me physically sick and overall unwell. I like the distinction between self-care and self-maintenance. That's very good, because a lot of people will talk about self-care and then they kind of mock self-care, but I like how you just brought those two up and paired them next to each other. Well, while we're on the topic of wellness, your new book, Quantum Wellness, Healing Your Mind, Body, and Spirit with Human Design, it blends ancient wisdom with human design and quantum physics. I do hear that word quantum quite a bit because I am familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza. I hear that word during meditations or workshops that I've taken. But can you share your take on quantum? And what does that mean to have quantum wellness? And maybe you touched on it a little bit with me, with our minds, but let's get into it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question a lot because I think that sometimes when we use the word quantum, it gets interpreted very interestingly. And it's like, I've heard people say things like, well, you're going to give people a quantum leap into wellness. And it's like, no, that's not what we're doing. So if we think about the quantum field, and let me be really clear, I use the word quantum, but I am not a quantum physicist. I don't really know anything about quantum physics other than very small, teeny tiny, like enough to make me not even dangerous, right? But here's my understanding. If we're looking at the quantum field, which is the field of non-manifest reality, it is a field of information that's filled with potential. And so when we are creating our lives and we are becoming cosmic storytellers and taking back control over our storytelling power, basically what we're doing is we're tapping into different potentials. Now, in the human story, we tend to measure potentials through archetypes, right? So if I say money, as I did earlier, money is just a potential or it's an archetype. It's just a part of the human story. Now, when we tell the story of money, money in its inception, in the way that it lives, it has a neutral definition, really, right? It's a way that we measure an exchange of value. That's a pretty neutral definition. But when we interpret the idea or the archetype of money through the meanings that we have, through the stories we have encoded, we give that neutral thing, that neutral potential, a lot of different meanings, right? Based on our own experiences. And each one of those meanings is just a different potential. It activates a different potential of money out of the quantum field, right? So when we start to tell stories or we live in a story and we are living in a story, really, what we're looking at is a quantum field of potentials that's really just a quantum field of stories. So let's break that down a little bit more, because when we talk about quantum wellness, what I'm really talking about is giving yourself permission to reframe the archetypes in your story so that you're taking back control over the field of information of that archetype and choosing to express that archetype or that story in your life the way that you decide is going to work for you. So let's take the word hermit. So when I say hermit, what comes to mind for you, Sarah?
I think of someone who's a recluse. They're probably introverted. They don't want to get out. They don't like crowds.
All right. So let's imagine that the word hermit or the archetype hermit is a diamond, right? So this is a field of information. So you have this idea about hermit that's over here. It's like a recluse, right? So we go back and think about To Kill a Mockingbird as Boo Radley, right? Or in other parts of our human stories, we have like, usually there's a wicked witch that lives in the woods somewhere, right? All alone, and she eats children or, you know, chickens or whatever. And we have all these little stories about hermits, recluses. But let's really think about, you said, okay, maybe an introvert. Well, being an introvert might be over here on the quantum field of information, right? So here we have the introvert. Now imagine that in your story about who you are, you say, you know, I'm a hermit. There's a part of my personality. There's an archetype that lives in my personal story that's a hermit. Well, maybe that's I'm an introvert. Now we start to think about, okay, let's imagine that you're a young woman and you just had a baby and you live far away from your family support system and your partner has to go back to work pretty quickly after you give birth and you're an introvert. And now you're all alone at home, recovering from birth. You've got this brand new baby. You're completely touched out. You haven't had a minute to yourself in like 3 weeks. You've been nursing. You haven't gotten a shower. Every time you get in the shower, the baby cries. You feel terrible. You feel guilty. You just need like 10 minutes to yourself, right? That's a shadow of the hermit energy, right? And so when we start saying, okay, where in my story does this hermit live? And how, if I'm going to take back control of this story, which isn't the only step, let's be really clear. Obviously, if this is your story, you're going to have to get to a space where you say, okay, I need to rearrange some aspects of my life right now. I need some more support. Maybe I need a mother's helper to come in, or maybe I need to, you know, get my partner to take over on Friday nights so I can just like go to a bookstore and drink some coffee for a minute, right? But you can't do those things if your story doesn't allow you. Like if you have a narrative around, you know, what's wrong with me? I, you know, my mom never had time to herself. Why am I craving time to myself? That's really selfish of me. I'm judging my hermit needs. I'm resisting core aspects of what I actually, you know, that are part of my story. And you shame yourself or you don't accept these parts of yourselves. If that's part of your story, then you're not going to make those changes that you need to make to bring yourself into resonance with your signature frequency of being a good, healthy hermit, right? So you have to change that story and say, okay, I have a hermit part of my personality. I'm a person who needs alone time to regenerate. That's part of my self-care. And I'm in a season where getting that's a little bit challenging. Right? I'm in a season in my life where maybe I'm not going to be able to do those things I used to be able to do. Maybe I'm not going to be able to go to a cabin for a week by myself and go, you know, just stare at trees and drool. But I do need to figure out how I can add that to my lifestyle. And in order for me to do that, I have to really acknowledge and love and be compassionate to myself around, I'm a person who really needs this. And it's okay. This is part of who I am. This is part of my story. And when you start to change that story piece, then you start to tap into the manifestation or the potential for the manifestation of a different experience of that hermit theme in your physical world.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. I've never heard it explained that way before, but I love the idea of looking at those parts of ourselves as archetypes instead of flaws, which is kind of what I feel like we tend to do. We tend to lean towards what's wrong with us. It seems to give us permission to understand ourselves with more compassion and not judging ourselves so much. Do you believe in manifestation and manifesting?
Well, we're all manifesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are a manifestation.
Right? Yes. You can't not. Your brain is constantly translating potential into reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, my husband and I were in a conversation yesterday about the brain, and you probably know this, that our bodies, whenever we're in the womb, we actually have, he heard this on a podcast, that our brain, our first brain is actually in our stomach, because our gut, like our gut wisdom. Do you know anything about that?
I would say that when we look what we call the brain, the actual brain is the one that's translating meaning, right? But our brain, what we think of as the brain and the nervous system is changing, has changed a lot in the last 15 years. And we do absolutely have a gut brain. And part of that gut brain is actually fed by and enhanced by healthy gut flora. But we actually have inner, you know, nerves that run from the gut to the heart to the brain. And in fact, the heart, which is also part of what I would call the brain, actually has more hardwiring. There's more heart neurological hardwiring from the heart to the brain than from the brain to the heart. And the heart itself also has its own inherent intelligence, which is why going back to when we talk about living and cultivating a state of conscious creativity in your life through being creative, through having creative practices, it does bring us into a state of what's called heart coherence, which means the heart is regulated and it's in a healthy state. And that allows us to think better. It allows us to see possibility more clearly because it's an essential part of our body brain. Like we have a body brain.
Yes. Absolutely. So speaking about the heart, if somebody is hearing whispers on their heart, they're hearing the nudge, they're hearing their intuition guiding them to try something new, perhaps try a new way of living or step into their authentic self, the idea keeps coming back to them, but then that fear takes them out. What's the suggestion you would have for them?
Do it.
Yeah, I like that. Easier said than done. But on the other hand, yes, just do it. Go for the thing.
Again, it's that thing where our story runs the show. And oftentimes we know, oh, I should do this thing. But then we talk ourselves out of it, mostly because of our story. And because, again, it's that reflexive, suspicion, doubtful thing that gets triggered. It's very interesting being a human being, because I would say when we look at our intuition and our instinct, which are two really different things, right? Our intuition is really our capacity to leap over our conditioning and really tap into that field of infinite potential. And our instincts are survival, right? The things you need to do to not get eaten by a bear. And in our human story, those two things are very enmeshed. And I think we're in a really interesting phase as human beings because we are instinctive. We'll probably always need to be instinctive. You'll need to always know how to run from the bear, but we let our existential fears feel like instinctive fears. And so we think, oh, I'm going to listen to my heart and then I'm going to die, right? And so we have to retrain the way we respond to our intuitive responses and not see them as instinctual responses. And that really, if we think about instinct and the fear associated with instinct, it's not designed to be sustained, right? When you face the bear, you run from the bear and then it's over.
Right.
But when we get our human story all mixed up in that, when we think, oh, if I listen to my heart, I'm going to put everything I have and everything I am at risk and I'm going to die, right? When we let that run the show, we don't let it dissipate. We get stuck in it and we get paralyzed in it. And there really is, unfortunately, it's hard in the beginning, but there really is great wisdom in feel the fear and do it anyway. And recognizing that as soon as you walk through that, you're like, oh, what was I so worried about? That wasn't even a big deal, right? And I would say give yourself permission to take the risk, even though you might be quaking in your boots, because the more you go, oh, here's that feeling again. It feels like I'm going to die, but I know I'm not actually going to die. And you do it enough times, your body starts to go, oh, I don't have to be so afraid of that resistance anymore. I can push through it and it'll dissipate.
Wise words. Repetition will get you there. I saw you have, is it a course or a workshop coming up? I don't think this episode will be out in time, but I want to spread the word. And then what else do you have? Do you have offerings from time to time? And then besides your books, because I know you have so many awesome books.
Oh, thank you. We are always offering things.
Okay.
Because I have a very creative practice and I am always creating things. So, you know, I would say go to our website, quantumhumandesign.com, and see what we're doing right now. I mean, this week we've started a new course called Healing the Witch Wound. We have professional level trainings. That's really what we love to do the most, although we get excited about everything we do. In our professional level trainings, we teach people how to use human design as an intentional storytelling tool so that you can help other people take back control over their story. I'll be live in May of 2026 at the Omega Institute. If you go to their website and look up their calendar, you can join me live for a Story Lab event. I'll be bringing my trunk of dress-up clothes and we'll have lots of glitter and paint and all kinds of fun things that we'll do as we work on your story. And of course, you can join me on social media, Dr. Karen Parker 22. Same thing, Facebook, Dr. Karen Parker 22, and on YouTube as well, where we have all kinds of videos and information for you to watch and learn about yourself.
Well, Karen, thank you. Is there anything moving on your heart that you would like to share with us as we come to an end?
I would just say it's a hard time on the planet right now. And it's a time when it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the unfolding of our current collective story. And I would say, if you're not on the front lines, and some of us are not, that when we feel powerless and we think, what can I do? I'll tell you what we can do is to make sure that our personal stories are really good personal stories, stories that include justice, equity, sustainability, peace, and abundance. Because if we think about how our stories work, your story is an energy. It's an energy field. It's a resonant frequency. When you're putting your story and you've got a good story together with your neighbor's story and your other neighbor's story and your other community member's stories, we start creating these aggregates of really good stories. And these stories are matrices of possibility. And if we want to, you know, midwife this shift of energy that we're in, the most revolutionary act you can commit is tell a really good story about who you are, how you are, and what you deserve. And stand in your value, because when you know that you are a once-in-a-lifetime cosmic event and so is everybody else, we start making a whole different set of decisions about the world.
Oh, I love that. Standing in your value and really trusting who you are. That feels like such a beautiful message and a beautiful place to end this conversation today. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and asking to be on the show. I am honored that you are here. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope this conversation with Dr. Karen Parker inspired you to think about the stories that you've been telling yourself about your life, and maybe you can begin to rewrite some of those. And if you'd like to learn more about Dr. Karen Parker, check out the links in the show notes. I know it was cutting out when she was talking about her website. Her website is quantumhumandesign.com. There you'll find out about her books, courses, and upcoming workshops. She is so incredible, and I was so lit up after talking with her and truly inspired to begin rewriting my own story and begin shifting into being more creative and getting out of those old patterns, waking up, getting out of autopilot. And I hope you will find the courage, the strength, and that spark to do that yourself in your own life. Here are three takeaways from our conversation. Your life is shaped by the stories you tell yourself. When we rewrite our internal narrative, we can change how we experience our lives. Two, creativity isn't optional. It's part of being human. It's who you are. It's in everybody. Creative expression helps regulate the nervous system, increase resilience, and improve our overall health. And three, burnout is often a sign or a signal that you've abandoned parts of yourself, your authentic self. And what you need is rest, play, self-care. Those things will help you restore your inner energy and reconnect you with all of those parts of who you truly are. And one thing I want to mention, I am just now getting to the editing part of this episode, but we did record this in February. As soon as we got off, I went and wrote my story just like she said to do. And instead of just having a one-line affirmation that I try to trick my body, I became this character and I had all these superpowers. And anytime I was around someone that was like directly coughing around me or sneezing like right in my direction, I just remembered my story and remembered those powers. I have not been sick at all. I kid you not. So there is so much power in what she is saying about conscious storytelling, and I hope that you will give it a try and use it for whatever story you want to rewrite. It is fascinating what our brains can do, and I am forever thankful to Dr. Karen for sharing that advice. So give it a try because it works.
Thank you so much for listening. I am so glad that you are here in this community. If this episode resonated with you, take a moment to share it with a friend or someone who might need to hear it. It would be an honor for me if you would leave us a comment, a review, follow, subscribe, all the things. All right, until next time, remember, your story is still being written. So keep dreaming big and keep doing things that make you feel alive. Take care, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Don't Quit Your Daydream. If today's episode inspired you, it would mean the world to me if you would take a moment to rate the show, leave a review, or share it with a friend who might need a little encouragement to follow their own dreams. Every share helps this community grow and keeps the inspiration flowing. Until next time, keep listening to those whispers on your heart and take one small step toward your daydream.